हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Thank you. Jaya Kunja Vihari. जय गोपी जनवल्ल जय गिरिवर धारी जय गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जनवल्ल जय गिरिवर धारी जय गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जनवल्ल जय गिरिवर धारी जय गिरिवर धारी जय यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना सीधवनचारी यमुना सीधवनचारी यमुना सीधवनचारी जय राधा माधवा जय कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधवा जय कुंज विहारी हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण कृष्ण
कृष्ण हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे जय राधा गोकुल नंद राधा गोकुल नंद राधे जय राधा गोकुल नंद राधा गोकुल नंद राधे जय राधा गोकुल नंद राधा गोकुल नंद राधे जय सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय
jay Gaurani Sai 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 jay prabhu pada 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 jay prabhu pada
Jayam Shupada Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotra Shata Shri Shriman Abhay Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharashila Prabhupada Ki Jayam Nitrila Pravishtom Shupada Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotra Shata Shri Shriman Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharashila Prabhupada Ki Ananda Godi Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Namajarya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Prayam Saho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gavira Bhakta Vrinda Ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gova Govinatha Shyama Kundaratha Kundagiri Govardhan Ki Vrindavan Dham Ki Mayapur Dham Ki Madhurapuri Dham Ki Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Dwaraka Puri Dham Ki Ganga Mai Ki Yamuna Mai Ki Tulasi Devi Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Gaur Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga All glories to Shri Prabhupada Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Ki Namini Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Prajarini Narvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyati Desha Dharini Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om
Adhyanatvirandhasya Jnananjana Shalagaya Chakshurum Mililam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sabidam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamahyam Dadadim Sobadandiyam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yudapadakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajadam Sahagana Raghunathanvidam Tam Sajivam Sadvaidam Savadhudam Parijana Sahidam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalitam Shri Vishakhanvidamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagalpade Govesha Gobiga Kanda Radha Kanda Namostude Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrushabhanusude Devi Pranamani Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Krupa Sindubhyayevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabho Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Om Parthaya Pranibodhidam Bhagavatam Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Graditam Purana Muninam Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitam Radavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusandhadami Bhagavad-gīde Bhavad-dveshanim Namostu Devyasa Vishala Buddhi Pullāra Vindāyata Vatra Netra Yena Tvaya Bharata Taila Purna Prajvalito Jnanamaya Pradīva Prapanna Parijādāya Totra Vetraiga Pānaye Jnana Mudrāya Krishnāya Gītāmrata Duhe Namām Sarvopanishado Gavo Dugdha Gopala Nandana Patho Valsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gitamrutam Mahan Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsa Janura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagad Gurum Bhishma Drona Tada Jayadhrata Jala Gandhara Nilolpala Shalya Grahavati Krupena Vahani Karnena Vela Kula Ashwatthama Vikarna Ghora Magara Duryodhana Vartini Sotirna Khalubanda Vairana Nadi Kaivartaka Keshava Parashalya Vajasaroja Mamalam Gidartha Gandholkadam Nanakhyanaka Kesaram Harikadha Sambhodhana Bodhidam Logai Sajjana Shalpadairaharahappe Viyamanam Muda Bhuyad Bharata Pangaja Kalimala Pradhvam Sina Shreyase Mukam Karoti Vajalam Pangam Langhayade Girim Yalkrupatam Aham Vande Paramananda Madhavam Yabrahma Varunindra Rudra Maruda Svanvandi Divyai Savir Vede Sangapade Kramopanishade Gayandiyam Samagah Dhyana Vastita Tadgadena Manasa Pashyandiyam Yogino Yasyandam Vidusura Suraganai Devaya Tasmai Nama Om Shri Krishnaya Nama Srimade Radhikaye Nama Sarvatra Govinda Nama Sankirtanam Govinda Govinda
discussing this universal form of Krishna, Visharupam, Visharupa Darshana Yogam, it's called the Bhagavad Gita. So, Krishna has spoken to Arjuna the three verses starting from 47, 48 and 49. Three verses Krishna has spoken to Arjuna. Krishna says that Maya prasannena tava arjunedam Rupam Varam Darshidam Atma Yoga Tejomayam Vishwam Anandamadhyam Enme Tadanye Nandrashtabhovam Na Veda Yajna Denir Nadane Na Chakrayabir Na Sabhobi Yugrai Evam Rupam Shakyam Aham Nalogi Vishwam Tadanye Nana Kuru Pravira. Then Madhevya Dhamaja Vimutabhavo Drishtuva Rupam Gauram Idam Mamedam Vibhedavi Pridamana Panastam Tadevame Yuvamidam Pramashya. This is where we stopped last Sunday. And continuing from there, you will see there that that Sanjaya comes in now, and Sanjaya says to Krishna, and the last verse, Krishna says that one should not get affected by the mind. We talked about that last Sunday, that the mind is such a thing that it can easily drive us away different kinds of what is called kalpana. Kalpanas will come. Kalpana means that basically the mind has this one nature called sankalpam and vikalpam, acceptance and rejection of things. So in the process of analyzing different things, various thoughts will come to the mind and it will start occupying different places in the mind, and they will start continuously producing, reproducing more and more thoughts from that. Vikshepam is called. Avaranam and Vikshepam is the nature of the mind. Or in English they call it as the covering potency, which is the Avaranam, and the deluding potency, which is called Vikshepam. This Vikshepam is the main cause of the problems. Vikshepam is the main problem. Vikshepam, the ones come from within. And Avaram, that mostly comes from outside. The covering is mostly from the outside. Maya that affects us is from outside. But the Vikshepam that is developing within the mind, that causes major problems. Really, Vikshepam. So, Krishna says here, Rupambaram darshinamatmayogal tejomayam vishwam anandamadhyam yenme tudanyenana drushabhuvam. That in order, while seeing me, Krishna says that you have to remember this, that the do not allow the mind to be withdrawn by the, to be infected by these different vikshepams. That in Jagradam, Jagrat, Sopnam and Sushupti, all times this is happening into the in the mind. So at that time Sanjaya says, Ityarjunam Vasudevastu Doktva Sogandrupam Darshayama Sabhuya Ashwasayamasa Jabidamenam Bhutuapuna Saumyavapuram Mahalma. Iti Arjunam Vasudevastu Doktva. Then when after speaking like this to Arjuna, Svagandubam Darshayama Sabhuyaha, that Krishna manifested his form and Ashwasayamasa Jabidamenam Bhutuapuna Saumyavapuram Mahalma. First time Krishna shows the four-handed form to Arjuna. And then from that four-handed form, Krishna comes to the two-handed form. This is Supreme Personality of Godhead, that form. Svagan rupam darshayama sabhuya ashwasayama sajamidamenam bhutvahuna saumyavavurmahalpam. Then Arjuna was a little bit perplexed by seeing these thousand hands, form of the thousand hands. And when the Chaturbahu form, the four-handed form of Krishna was seen, Arjuna was pacified. Arjuna felt happy about that. But then again, Arjuna was used to seeing the two-handed form, which is Krishna's form, and that is what Arjuna wanted to see. So Krishna comes back to the two-handed form again. So that is what Sanjaya says to Dhritarashtra. Iti Arjunam Vasudevastu Doktva Svagandrupam Darshayama Sabhuya Ashwasayama Sajabidamenam Bhutu Ahuna Saumyavavur Mahalpam. So here there is one important statement there in Sanjaya's statement. He says there, Ashwasayama Sajabidamenam. Ashwasa means somebody who can consoling him. So Arjuna wants to be consoled. Actually, while experiencing all transcendental experiences, a guru's presence, a spiritual master's presence is necessary. Why is it necessary? Because when we leave this material consciousness and move on to spiritual consciousness, various kinds of thoughts can happen in the mind because of the different experiences. So here, that is why that word ashwasam is used. Ashwasam means that somebody who can console you from the change, what's happening from the material life. And ashwasayamasa jabidamenam, this is the role of the guru in spiritual life. The role of the guru is that when one is advancing on the spiritual path, that at different points, different times in spiritual life, there could be different issues which requires a higher authority to interfere. That higher authority is the spiritual master. Higher authority's role is one who has realized Krishna alone can do that. Otherwise it is difficult to alleviate the doubts of a disciple in different stages of Krishna consciousness. So therefore it is says here, Ashwasayama sajabidamenam bitva apuna saumyavapur mahalma. So how they take it, because the doubts can be various kinds of doubts will come for a devotee or for a jnani or for a yogi, whoever it is. In the spiritual master's role is throughout the process of Krishna consciousness. It's not only finishes with the day one. That somebody, people have this misunderstanding that the once you are connected to the system or to the connected to the link, it's everything is done. Now I'm okay, I'm covered. That it's not an insurance policy like that. It's not. It's a process begins from that day. And the spiritual master's role continues to be there throughout spiritual life. That is why this surrender all means, that surrender to spiritual master means that relationship with the spiritual master throughout the spiritual life. Otherwise, there is no meaning to this. That realization from spiritual life comes from the mercy of Krishna and from the spiritual master. The both of them have a very important role in that. That's why this ashwasam, the word ashwasam means to console. Ashwasayama sajabidamenam vitva puna somyavavurmahalmam. That only by consolation that that Arjuna was brought back into his normal state of mind. To the normal state of mind. Even for yogis, this experience is quite common. That when they go into the higher state, that is the samadhi state, from samadhi they will come back in their process of dhyanam or meditation. Yamam nemam asanam pranayamam pratyaharam dharana dhyanam samadhi. That is the system. So from dhyanam, when one goes into samadhi, for a long time, sometimes some yogis can stay in the samadhi position. But when they come back to dhyanam and then they fall back from that into the mundane world again, it's a big experience, change of experience from what they were experiencing before. So there you can see that the yogi also requires some help at that time. Bhitva abhuna samyava varum mahalpam. That Krishna, in this particular case, Arjuna had fallen into a situation where he experienced that transcendental happiness in seeing Krishna's universal form, and now he has come back to the normal state of mind. Krishna has brought him back. Just like when Mother Yashoda also experienced the same thing. You can see in the Bhagavadam how that has happened. Otherwise, all kinds of doubts will happen. Example, how these doubts appear in the mind. It's a very difficult thing to clarify these things. But just to give an example, that when there was one army officer, he was trying to teach some students how to shoot with the rifle. So this particular person, although he was in the army for a period of time, he didn't get much opportunity to fight the battle. It didn't happen in his life. Maybe the time was very peaceful, or he just had to go through the normal training, but real battle he didn't fight. He didn't have an opportunity to fight that way. So it so happened he retired from the army, and then he had undertaken the task of training young people in rifle training, how to shoot the rifle. So these kind of things, like the ex-army people take up such an appointment or such a job. So he's taken up one of them. So normally when he starts training up people, he will talk about the rifle and the shooting range and various kinds of things associated with the shooting. And that is how he continued his training. But very little was done practically in shooting. And the students who were trained under him noticed that he wasn't very enthusiastic to train them practically. And most of the time was spent on talking about the shooting. So this carried on for some time, and one day he brought a rifle and showed it to them, and he told them that this particular rifle has an effective range of 500 meters. 500 meters, he said. It's an effective range of 500 meters. So everybody was listening to that. So one of the students asked him that if the range is 500 meter, effective range is 500 meter, what will happen if someone who is standing, say, 10 meters ahead, say 510 meter, what will happen to him if he gets hit with the bullet from this rifle? So he couldn't know what to answer. So he told them straight away, he will die if he is shot by that. But then he said, the effective range is only 500, he said. He'll get shot, but the effective range is 500. In other words, he couldn't explain that properly, that what this effective range means. The manufacturer says the effective range is 500 meter. But at 510 meter also, he can be killed.
he would be killed. But it says the effective range is 500 meters. So this way doubts can come to people's mind about the various things. Spiritual life also, this kind of questions will, different kinds of vikshepam will come. And in order to answer that, the presence of the spiritual master is necessary. Spiritual master takes the disciple in that process to help him, to assist him. Therefore, a strong sadhana is required in order to realize the truths in Bhagavad Gita. So, Krishna says here that the Ashwasayama sajabhidamenam bhutvapuna saumyavavur mahalmaha. That Ashwasayama, that Krishna, that is what the role Krishna has taken as the spiritual master here. And Krishna has spoken in that way to Arjuna. That to avoid all this confusion in the mind, Krishna says to him that in the previous verse, Krishna told him, Madevyadama Javimudhavo, Drishtuarubam Goyramidam Mamedam, Vevedami Pridamana Punastvam, Tadeva Merupamidam Prabhasya. That Madevyadama Javimudhavo, the Vimudhavam has to go, Veda has to go, all kinds of misconceptions has to go from the mind. Krishna says that now that you have experienced my universal form, Krishna says to Arjuna. So, Sanjaya mentioned this to Dhritarashtra. And then he continues what Arjuna said. Drishtvedam manusham rubam tava saumyam janardana idanim asmi samvratta sajeda prakritim gadaha. From now on till the end of Bhagavad Gita is nothing but Upanishads. Upanishads verses Krishna has spoken. That's all it is. The verses in Bhagavad Gita, this is the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna says like this. Drishtu edam manusham rubam tava saumyam janardana idanim asmi samvratta sajeda prakritim gada. Then Krishna, Arjuna says to him that after seeing your human form, drishtu edam manusham rubam, manusham rubam means the human form, Arjuna says tava saumyam janardana, janardana, I am becoming pacified, I am peaceful now. Up to now, he was not feeling that peace. Therefore, Krishna has shown his two-handed form to Arjuna. Drishtu edam manusham rubam tava saumyam janardana idanim asmi samvratta sajeda prakritim gada. Then, I am peaceful. That's what Arjuna says to Krishna. Arjuna says, Arjuna vacha, drishtu edam manusham rubam tava saumyam janardana idanim asmi samvratta sajeda prakritim gada. That all kinds of dualities and all kinds of experiences I had, disturbing experiences, all that has gone away from my mind now. And also, Krishna, Arjuna says, now that I have seen that form of Krishna, the universal form, I do not think I'll be any more fearful about things. In other words, Krishna, Arjuna was now saying that I have now understood my position, what I am. You see, Arjuna's difficulty in fighting was because of the bodily identification, isn't it? Bodily identification. Actually, from now on, till the end of this chapter, Krishna is preparing for the next chapter. It's kind of an introduction for the next chapter. Next chapter is Bhakti Yoga. So here you can see that already Arjuna is saying, I am ready now. In other words, drishtvedam manusham rubam tava saumyam janardana idanim asmi samvratta sajeda prakritim gadaha. That after seeing this form of Krishna's universal form, I am pacified now and my mind is clear, it is peaceful. Because Arjuna knows now who is behind me, who is in this battle. Krishna has spoken enough about the battle, isn't it? Already Mahabharata war has been decided. And Krishna has told categorically to Arjuna, there is nothing more to discuss. It's all sorted finally. And it's only, you are only a cause and you have to complete the job. That's all. So with that words from Krishna, Arjuna has got that confidence now that Krishna is fully behind him and he should continue and fight the war. That was Arjuna's mood at this time. This also is pointing out to something else. These are the subtle things of Bhagavad Gita. What it means is, when Arjuna is speaking like this, Actually, Arjuna is speaking on behalf of us, isn't it? Whole Bhagavad Gita was spoken for our benefit. Arjuna did not require a long lecture like this from Krishna, Krishna's close associate, and to fight the war. But keeping Mahabharata war as a in the background, keeping Arjuna as an object for our benefit, human society's benefit, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. We mentioned this before. As it is in the Upanishads, the same thing. Almanam Brethinam Vidhi. That is always we have to remember that verses. Almanam Brethinam Vidhi, Shairam Rathamevaja, Buddhistu Saradam Vidhi, Manapragrahamevaja. That is how this our life is. That is to whom it is directed. Almanam Brethinam Vidhi. The passenger, the soul is the passenger in this body. Almanam Brethinam Vidhi. Shariram Rathamevaja. The material body is the chariot. Buddhistu Saradhim Vidhi. Intelligence is the charioteer. And Manapragraha Mevaja. The mind is the rein which controls the horses, which are the senses. We have seen that from the Upanishads. That's the same thing what has been taken out into Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita is only reflecting that great statement of Upanishads. The great statement of Upanishads is reflected in Bhagavad Gita like this. So here, Arjuna is saying to Krishna that my illusion, all my doubts and confusion and everything what I was experiencing till now, the Vyamoham or Vyakulada, everything listed there, that's all gone now. And I am peaceful now to do what I have to do. That's what Arjuna is saying. Strictly speaking, this is exactly in reference to a person who is realized. When realized what? Realized his identity, Surupam. Surupam means his own form. What I am, my real form is. In other words, as spirit soul, when you have realized that your identity as the spirit soul, all these things goes away from a person. All the confusion and all the dualities of this world and the perplexities, what we experience under the influence of Maya, that goes away as soon as one is self-realized. Self-realized means one who has understood one's own true identity, spiritual identity. This is what that verse reflects on. That as soon as we realize our identity, immediately all these enemies within goes away from our inside. That it goes away. Enemies are this. All these different personalities in the Bhagavad Gita or in Mahabharata referred to, as Vedavyas is referring to, they are the enemies whom we are fighting against. This Karna, Duryodhana and Dushasana and all that, Shalya, they are all the enemies within, different kinds of enemies we are fighting against. Sattvam and Rajogunam and Tamogunam is inside. So this battle within is what is happening. And in that battle, when one is self-realized, the battle is over. It is only up to that all these things goes on. Because as for a self-realized soul, all these illusions, Maya cannot touch him anymore. Maya cannot touch him. That's why Arjuna is saying here, Drishtvedam manusham rupam tava saumyam janardana idanim masmi samrutta sajeda prakritim gadaha. My true nature is now, I have understood my true nature. True nature means realized state. That is what he is saying. That once nobody can frighten me anymore. In other words, nobody can frighten me anymore. It is like that, isn't it? In everything you will notice, till you realize something, you have all apprehensions about it. You don't know what it is. So you have various kinds of apprehensions in your mind. But once you have realized, then there is no more doubt about it. Just like in the martial arts, I don't know whether you have any opportunity to notice how they teach martial arts. In the martial arts, normally what happens is that when the instructor, just like in judo and karate and all that, when the instructor is teaching the students, he will put them through different tests at different times to check how alert he is in his practicing. He will teach them different techniques at different times in different stages during the process of training them up. But what happens normally is all these different kinds of practices is only done to increase his alertness, to make him agile all the time and be alert against the enemy who is going to attack him anytime. That is the way martial arts are taught. In different martial arts, this is the same thing. The principle is the same, but techniques are different. That's all. There is something very common to all the martial arts, and this is one of them. that they teach them in such a way that they are constantly made to become aware and alert about any attack from any side, any time. So this will continue for quite some time. And sometime, what the instructor does is, while teaching in that process, suddenly he will attack them. And see whether he was alert enough to defend at that time. Was he alert enough? It's not like in the classroom, you sit and learn something and then we relax ourselves. No, that alertness is necessary even for a person who is in that process. So, it is like that in spiritual life also. That when one is constantly in alert of what is happening around us from Maya's influence, then when that alertness comes to oneself, at that point you can say that you will not be attacked by Maya anymore. Because once you have become alert enough, due to training the mind, that's what it is. Drishtvedam manusham rupam tava saumyam janardana idanim asmi samratta sajeda prakritim gadaham. That prakritim, our nature, true nature, a self-realized state, when it happens, that alertness will be complete. You will be fully alert against the attack of Maya. Otherwise, at the moment, we are completely under the attack of Maya, so we don't know what is that alertness even means. We are constantly subjected to the three modes of material nature, and every time we get confused by the attacks of Maya in different situations. But for as soon as when one realizes his true identity as spirit soul, then there is no more Maya can touch him. Maya cannot attack him. And that is what Arjuna is saying through this verse. Although it's not explicitly mentioned like this, all the acharyas on the Bhagavad Gita agrees on this point. That Arjuna seeing the universal form, has this effect on that person, on Arjuna. That he has been released from illusion. Illusion is gone. Because Krishna had to get him out of that to fight this battle. And in order to do that, Krishna had to bring him through this process of knowledge, which we have seen till this 10-11 chapters. And at the end of that, Arjuna is admitting now that I am free from that illusion. That's why it mentions like that. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Sudurdasham Imam Rumam Drishtavanasiyan Mama Deva Apyasya Rubasya Nityam Darshanagam Shinaha. Then when Arjuna said like this, Arjuna was saying that Drishtvedam Manusham Rubam Navasomyam Janardana. Although now Arjuna is relating with Krishna in a different way. Not exactly like before they were friends. But now he has seen Krishna's true nature, identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of the whole creation of the universe, and Krishna, who Krishna is. Arjuna has come to his senses. So Arjuna is saying here that Drishtvedam Manusham Rubam Dava Somyam Janardana Idanim Asmi Samrata Sacheda Prakritim Gadaha. That my nature has now become different. I have become a different nature altogether. As I mentioned, like in the martial arts, how they train, it is like that. It's something similar to that. It's not much different. That when you realized, then you have become a different person altogether. When you're different, become a different person altogether. And similarly, in spiritual life also, you require that help up to a certain point. Once you have tasted what that is, what that Krishna is talking about, then you will go on your own. From there you could fly. There won't be so much help needed. But first that taste of that realization is necessary. Just like there was one man who was who made thieving as his profession. That was his profession. He was a professional thief. He used to thief everything. Anything and everything whichever he can get hold of. And he was good at it. He continued his whole life doing this. So in due course, he became a family man and he had his son also. So when the son grew up, the son noticed that this is what the father was doing throughout his life. He was nothing but, he was stealing always things from different things. So the son was also a clever person, like the father's cleverness. The same cleverness has come to the son also. So what the son used to do, father will steal something and bring home, and he will steal from that. So in other words, he has mastered the technique better than the father. So he could even do that. Such an extent he has become expert at it. So these two, father and the son, they carried on like this. And father thought, oh, he's only a little boy. Let him take his own time to grow up. I'll train him up. And all that. He was thinking like that. So when he grew up a little bit, when father realized that now that he can go into the field, one day he called his son and told him that, look, this is our, what you call, family tradition. Is this. What is it? Stealing. That's our family tradition. We do that and we don't have any problem with that. You also, I would also like you to continue with that. He didn't want to send him to school and do something else or anything like that. He just wanted him that let us continue the family tradition, whatever it is. So he started training him up in this way. He noticed that son had much more intelligence and much more smarter in thinking, because from the birth itself his mind is not polluted. It was directional in that way. That he was clear in his head, I have to do this job all the time, so his mind was always absorbed in that. That's the beauty of the mind. Mind, if you can absorb in something with full intensity, it will bring out solutions of its own. So this father, he decided one day, is my son ready enough to go to the field and start doing the business himself? So one day he thought that maybe I should test it in the field, how he handles the situation. This was the father's decision. So what he did was, he told the son that, look, we are going to break into one house today and then we'll see what happens, he thought. He said, let's see what happens, he said. So they went to one house and they broke into the house. The people were not alert enough. They were busy watching some serial in the television or whatever. That was the normal, usual story. They were doing, it was around that time, late in the evenings, and they managed to get into the house. And both father and son is inside the house. So that time, what did the father do? Father made some noise so that it will wake up everyone in the house. And saying this, and son was somewhere around in the vicinity. It was dark also in the room. Without anybody being noticed, the father escaped through the window, one of the window, went out, jumped out and ran away. So ran away, suddenly everyone in the house came to hear about noise and everything, and they got, you know, immediately came to know that there is somebody in the house. So they what they did was they closed the door open and started searching. He said, put the lights on, and was looking for the thief inside. Meanwhile, the father has escaped through the window and ran away from there. So the window was lying open, but the son was left inside the house. Father has done this deliberately. The son realized that the people are aware of their presence. So what did he do? He opened one door of a cupboard or something and got into that. And he closed the door from inside. So meanwhile, the people were talking outside the cupboard and they were looking for what has been stolen, or, you know, how when a burglary happens, what happens in the house. So they were looking around for the thief and they realized that a thief has escaped, this and everything. But this man is inside the cupboard. He has to come out from there. So all this is going on. So he thought, father was trying to find out how capable he was, whether he has really mastered the technique or is he ready to go into the field now. This was the father's intention. So he kept his ears very alert to hear what's going on. And suddenly, when he understood that most of the people have looked around and they've gone back, they closed the windows or whatever it is, and then they've gone away, then he made the sound of a cat from inside the cupboard. He started making a sound of a cat. So, and saying this, when the sound of the cat, so the sound of the cat, so the servant in the house heard the sound of the cat from inside the cupboard. She opened the cupboard. As soon as she opened the cupboard, he jumped out and jumped through the window and ran. And as soon as he ran out, they realized that this is the thief who has stolen. Actually, the other person was masterminding everything. He was just left in that situation to escape. He wasn't ready for it. But he was left in the situation to escape from there. He jumped through the window and ran out. When he ran out, all the people in the house chased him. They chased him, and they chased him for quite a while. But he was young, he could run faster. He ran very fast and realized that people are chasing him. So what did he do? He saw a big stone near a well. He took that and put it in the well straight away. Pushed it into the well. And it was dark, there was no light. But the sound of the stone falling into the well, they all heard. So they thought that he has fallen into the well. So they all went around the well looking for him. Meanwhile, he escaped and he got home. So when he got home, the father asked him what happened. So the son told him everything what has happened. Father said, now you are ready for the field. You passed the test, he says. So what it is saying to us is this. Don't ask what happened after that and all. It's not important. It's not important. One thing is to know that how this sequence of events, how these things happen in life. That drishtvedam manisham rupam tava saumyam janardana idanim asmi samvritta sajeda prakritingadaha. This prakritingada means that once you know your true identity, once you know your true identity, what you are, then once identity is known, then Maya withdraws. Maya cannot do anything with you after that. Because Maya plays this role with us so long as we don't know what we are. So Swarupa Anusandhanam Bhaktirithyavidhiyade, it says like that. So Swarupam, one's own Swarupam. One Swarupam means one's identity. So Swarupanu Anusandhanam, so long as you have not identified yourself, who you are, this confusion will continue to exist. That is the message from that verse. Till you have identified yourself, what your true identity is, up to that point, you have to have this confusion. There is nothing you can do about it. So all these things are in that verse. I'm just given this example to make it a little easier. That through the examples you can see that up to the point when you don't realize what our true identity is, Maya will definitely get us. Maya will give us different versions of truth. Why it is Krishna is called Absolute Truth? Absolute Truth means that once known, once the truth is known, no more confusion after that. What is that relationship with Krishna? Our relationship. We have a stronger relationship with Krishna than Maya. But in the conditioned state, Maya controls us. Maya controls us. And therefore, we have no relation. We don't feel any connection with Krishna. But once that is gone, when Swarupam, our own true identity is realized, so Swarupanu Anusandhanam, that's what it is said. So Swarupam means our own true identity is known, that illusion goes away. So Swarupanu Sandhanam Bhaktiritya Vidhiyade, that illusion that goes away from there, and devotion brings us to that state. That is what is the important thing in that verse. All these mantras, these are called mantras actually. They are actually mantras. Bhagavad Gita verses are all mantras. It is to be chewed and thought about plenty of times. So that you can see from that so many interesting realizations comes from the great devotees. They comes out with the understanding that Bhagavad Gita is opening up to us what the spiritual world is. The real understanding of spiritual life, it comes to us. Drishtvedam manusham rupam tava saumyam janardana idanim asmi samvritta sajeda prakritim gadaha. And then in a reply to that, Krishna is saying, Sri Bhagavan Vaja, sudurdasham idam rupam drishtavanasi mama deva apyasi rupasya nityam darshanakam kshinaha. So from now onwards, right up to the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking. Krishna is saying, up to verses 55, Krishna is speaking. So these four or five verses, they are from Upanishad's message. Straight away Krishna has put it in there. Krishna says to Arjuna, sudurdasham idam rupam drishtavanasi mama deva apyasi rupasya nityam darshanakam kshinaham. That this form of mind, what you have seen today, is difficult to see. Krishna says, is difficult to see. For whom? Even for the demigods, is difficult to see. Why did Krishna say like that? Sudurdashamidam rupam drishtavanasi mama deva apyasya rupasya nityam darshanakankshinaha. Demigods also wants to see this, but they cannot see. Even they cannot see it, but you have seen that. What does Krishna mean by that? In the Upanishads, demigods means the senses. All the senses are the demigods, the Adhishtadra Devata, or the predominating deities of the senses are the demigods. Predominating deities of the senses are the demigods. So Durdashamidam Rubam Drishtavanasi Yanmama Deva Apyasya Rubasya Nityam Darshana Kankshina. These demigods, they want to see me. What does it mean? It means like this, that the predominating deities of the senses, or Indriya Devada, Indriya Adhishtadra Devada, that is how it is referred to in the Shastram. Adhishtadra Devada of Indriyam, of the senses. Through them, through senses, you cannot know them. That is what it means. Through senses, it cannot be known. Then, actually, what are we doing with the senses? We have these senses of knowledge and senses of action, isn't it? Actually, through senses, we are looking for happiness, are we not? That is what senses are for. We feel that continuously gratifying the senses, we will achieve happiness in life. This is what we are searching after. Everyone in this world, no matter who it is only looking for happiness. And that we search through the senses. This is known thing. This doesn't require much explanation. Only thing, we have to look at our own life, what we have been doing all along. So Krishna is saying here, Deva apyasya rupasya nityam darshana kankshina. They also, through the senses, this search is going on, but it never comes to any, you cannot get it. You won't get it through searching through senses. This understanding or this realization won't come to you, Krishna says. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in order to explain this particular point, there is a very beautiful story in the 9th canto. In the Namaskandam, 9th canto talks about a beautiful exposition of this, that how one cannot achieve transcendental happiness through the sense gratification. And we have talked about this in the Bhagavatam, but still I'll briefly go through that story. Saubhari Maharshi, in the Bhagavatam, the 9th canto you will see, Saubhari Maharshi was performing penances in the forest. First he was performing penances at home, in his Parnashala, or the place wherever he lived. And then he noticed that the members of the family and relatives and friends, they were constantly disturbing him all the time with their interest in their social life, in other words, which is quite normal in this world. That's the only service you get from them. They'll come and they will engage you nicely and waste your time and their time as well. They are experts at that. And we have a problem also. We don't know what to say to them. We think that if we say to them that please don't come anymore, that will be very rude. That's also a problem. And then sometimes we think, oh, let's pray to Krishna that he goes away as soon as he comes. That also, because there is nothing much to talk, all nonsense they come brings along with them. They have no interest in Krishna consciousness, and only thing they do is waste others' time. And because of the situation, often we end up in this kind of problem. So Saubhari also had this difficulty in the beginning. So what did Saubhari do? Saubhari went to the forest to perform penances in the forest. While in forest, Saubhari realized that his mind is still not very still. He's not able to get that concentration, what was required. Because in order to engage in spiritual life, one has to be free from external disturbances. Otherwise, how can one focus his mind in spiritual activities? It is impossible. A disturbed mind, a disturbed life is not favorable or conducive for spiritual life. It's always, that's why people who are in Rajogunam and Tamogunam, unless they bring themselves up into Sattvagunam, it is very difficult for them to understand the message of Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. And getting out of this is why it is said that Sattva Prasidadi, that one comes to Sattvagunam, he will understand Bhagavatam. One who understands Bhagavatam is in the Sattvagunam. So it is necessary to be like that. That's a necessity. So whatever that is coming on the way, in in bringing that peaceful condition in life, one has to avoid that. Because these two things are difficult to carry on together. Rajoganam and Tamoganam, and at the same time developing Krishna consciousness, is difficult. And so our Saubhari, what he did was, when he was in the forest, sometimes he was hearing the sound of the birds singing, some of the beautiful birds singing. And sometimes he noticed also the birds, they mating each other, and activities like that were disturbing his mind. Saubhari's mind was disturbed like this. So Saubhari thought, rather than staying on the land and doing this, by now he has developed a lot of yogic power. Yogic power means he could do different things, like he could stay underneath the water for a long period of time, controlling his breath and things like that. Many yogic powers he has developed. So Saubhari Maharshi decided, I will go to Kalini River and stay underneath the water and perform my penances. Maybe I will not be disturbed by what's going on in this world. Because once you're gone underneath the water, then probably he felt he is safer there. So he goes underneath the water to perform his penances. So while he was underneath the water in meditation, in dhyanam, all the great sages have done this. They have the capacity to do that. Even if you read in the Bhagavatam, you will find in the fourth canto, you will find the story of Prachetas, Dasha Prajapati's children. Prachetas was the children of Prachina Bharis. This Prachetas, 10 of them, they spent 10,000 years underneath the water performing meditation, chanting the mantra, what is called as Rudragidam. Rudragidam was spoken, and they were chanting Rudragidam underneath the water. And 10,000 years they spent underneath the water. It's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's not a new thing. Great, great sages have done this in the past. Saubhari Maharshi goes underneath the water and performs his meditation there. While in meditation, one day he saw a family of fish going happily together. A family. The father fish, the mother fish, and a few baby fish, all together like a family. They were together and playing together each other. Typical householder life was going on underneath the water in this fish family. When Saubhari saw that, Saubhari's mind suddenly brought him back thoughts about family life. The thoughts came back to him. Even the fish is enjoying like this. What am I doing here underneath this water? A thought came up to him like this. Just to say that, how the mind is, the nature of the mind. When it will cheat you, you don't know. It can happen any time. You may be thinking, oh, I am well settled now, and my chanting is going very well. I'm reading Bhagavatam, I'm studying Bhagavad Gita, everything. All that's very good. But in which moment, when that will happen, you don't know. But that's why Krishna says to Arjuna that, Durjayana Mahammana, that mind inside, in which way it will come out, at what point, you can never say that. So Saubhari, when he saw that, the family life of this fish, a fish family life he saw, and he got disturbed because of that. He thought, let me stop this meditation for some time. Let me engage in family life. Desire came up like that. What can you do? If a desire comes like that, what can be done? He wanted to get married, wanted to have a family life. But when he came out of the water, for hundreds of years it was underneath the water. So the body was more like a fish body. It has changed lying underneath the water. The body has lost all its... it has become cleaner, no doubt. But at the same time, the skin has become like a fish skin. And if you touch it, it will slip. To that extent, the body has become very... the fish-like nature, the body. But still, being a sage and all that, he knew what he had to do. The sages, brahmacharis, at those days, the system was, if they want to get married, they have a right to go and ask the king. And it is the duty of the king to find a wife for them. That was the system. That is why, if you remember, in the 8th canto of Bhagavadam, when Vamanamurti's life was discussed, we have seen Vamanamurti wanted to, when he went to Mahavali, Mahabali asked Vamanamurti one question. What was that? The question was, should I find a wife for you? Mahabali asked this to Vamanamurti. Why? Mahabali thought Vamanamurti is a brahmachari. And brahmachari has to come to the king only if he wants to get married. So as he come to find out a wife for him, it is the duty of the king to find a wife for the brahmachari. So similarly, our great sage Saubhari also did exactly the same thing. He went to the king, and that king is also a very famous personality. His name is Mandhadav he is called. He has a story also behind. That's in the Bhagavatam, you can read. Mandhada, Indra put his finger into his mouth, and that's how he got this name Mandhada. So this Mandhada was the king at that time. Saubhari came up to him and told him about his desire to get married. And not only that, Saubhari expressed his desire to marry the daughter of the king. Mandhada had 50 daughters, and he wanted to marry one of the daughters from Mandhada's daughters. So Mandhada says to Saubhari, Mandhada didn't want to marry any of his daughters to him, seeing his bodily beauty, what he was at that time, long hair, grown nails everywhere, and matted hair that too, and body was because of lying in the water for so long, it has lost all its beauty and couldn't even recognize as a human form. And Mandhada thought, how can I marry my daughter to this man? What a crime it will be. How she will take it. This, that and the other. So Mandhada also knew, if I refuse to marry my daughter to him, he will probably put a next strong curse on me, and that will be the end of the kingdom business, everything. So he thought for a minute. He did not know. But because he was intelligent, he found an answer. His answer is very interesting. He says to Saubhari, that it is difficult for me to pick one daughter out of my 50 daughters. They are living there, their quarters is there. You can go ask them, and if any one of them are willing to marry you, you can marry them. I have no objection. He puts it to them to decide. In other words, he passed the buck to them. That's what he did. Very nicely he did it. But all he could do was this. Mandhada had no other choice except to say this to him. That he thought that if any one of them accept you, you can marry them. That's how he put it to him. So he knew that none of them will accept him. None of them will accept Saubhari, seeing this form. So Mandhada got the message. Saubhari got the message. Why Mandhada said like that? He thought himself, it's because Mandhada is seeing my body. No, he doesn't know me who I am. Therefore, he has spoken like this. Let me show him who I am. Saubhari thought himself like that. What did Saubhari do? Saubhari, out of his yogic power, changed his body into a beautiful, youthful form. Amazingly attractive form he took and went to the palace. And when he went to the palace where the daughters of Mandhada were living there, when they saw this young youthful personality walking in, all 50 of them wanted to marry him. All 50 of them wanted to marry him. And he married all 50 of them. All 50 of them. And had an amazing family life after that. Amazing family life. At the end of his family life, Saubhari realized that what has happened to me? How did I fall into this situation? Why? Sudurdashavidam rupam drishtavanasi enmama deva apyasya rupasya nityam darshanakankshinaham. This is that verse, referring to that. That why is that you have withdrawn from everything in this world and you have come to spiritual life, and eventually Maya takes you away like this and keeps you busy with something for the rest of your life. And at the very end, you are thinking that, oh, what did I do all my life? I wasted my life. These thoughts will come back to him again. So this instruction in the Bhagavatam is very important, because whole of 9th canto is pointing out to one thing before coming to 10th canto. Vedavyasa Maharshi has put everything in such a wonderful way in the Bhagavatam. that unless one is ready with full renunciation, detachment, vairagyam is not there, jnanam won't get firmly fixed up. The spiritual knowledge will only stay very firm in one's heart so long as there is vairagyam or renunciation is inside. If there is no renunciation and detachment, simply thinking, I'll make money in this world, at the same time I'll have my spiritual life together, it's not going to happen. Bhagavatam is warning us from the ninth canto. This is that story pointing out to us. Spiritual life is a higher thing. In order to get that higher thing, the lower things has to be given up. And therefore, material sense enjoyment and attachment to material wealth, material happiness, all these things has to be thrown away at some point in spiritual life. Because then what's left is only Krishna. And it is only then one can focus one's mind in Krishna consciousness. So this one important point, through this Saubhari's and Mandhara's story in the Bhagavatam, how important it is to have renunciation and vairagyam inside before becoming qualified for bhakti. Bhakti means pure love for Krishna. And that has to be devoid of all other things, all other attachments. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but to bring these three things in a person. Jnana Vairagyam and also Bhakti. These are the three things, isn't it? In the first canto, when if you read in the second chapter, I think, in the first canto, second chapter, you will see Vedavyas is repeating there again and again this one point, that that Bhakti will only develop in combination with Jnanam and Vairagyam. Those two things are therefore called the children of Bhakti. Bhakti's children are Jnanam and Vairagyam. Jnana Vairagya Yukteya Pashyanda Atmani Chalmanam Bhaktya Shruta Grahitaya. Vedavyas says like that. Shishugan says to Parikshit that Bhaktya Shruta Grahitaya Pashyanda Atmani Chalmanam Bhaktya Shruta Grahitaya. That is in the Bhagavatam. You can see that. That one will start seeing oneself, one will realize oneself, and when one is realizing oneself, Jnanam and Vairagyam will come from that. That is a part of that. This self-realization is not just realizing the self. Along with that, the whole nature of a person changes. Whole nature of a person changes. When a person is truly self-realized, this is the proof for that. That Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya, Jnanam and Vairagyam is with him at that time. Pashyanti Almani Chalpanam. He is seeing the soul. The realization has come to him. Bhaktya Ashruta Grihidaya. All that he can do at that time, his devotion to Krishna has increased considerably. That he feels that pure devotion to Krishna. So all these things go simultaneously together. It's not that only one thing when it changes, other things are still with him. Because all these things are on the matter and material attachment or contamination also the soul. Soul does not contaminate it normally, but when we say in relationship with Maya, they are contamination for the living entity. That has to go away. So this here, in this particular verse, Krishna is saying there that Indriya Dushtadri Devada, which are the demigods, through that if you search, you won't find it. Find me in this form. Krishna says to Arjuna. In other words, this process is different. Sudurdashamidam rubam drashtavanasi yannama deva apyasya rubasya nityam darshanakankshinaha. Then what else Krishna says? Naham vedirna tavasam nadanena na chejaya shakevam vidodrashtam drashtavanasi mam yathaha. Another important verse. Naham vedirna tavasam nadanena na chejaya. Krishna says there, no, neither by studying Vedas nor by performing austerities, nadanena, nor by performing charity, ijaya, or by performing sacrifices. Naham vedirna tavasa nadanena chejaya shakevam vidho drashtam drashtavanasi mam yatha. That you will be able to see me in the way you have seen me. Krishna says like that. That this is not never happened before. In other words, even by studying Vedas or reciting the Vedic hymns, you will be able not be able to see Krishna in the way Arjuna has seen. This is what Bhagavad Gita is saying. Naham vedirna tapasa. By performing austerities and penances, by tapasa means that. Nadanena, not by charity or ijaya. Ijaya means by performing yagam or sacrifices. Shakeva vidodrashtam. Drashti will not be able to see me in the way you have seen me today. This one statement from Krishna is also there in the Upanishads. That Upanishad says like this. These are all the mantras. As I said, the mantras of Bhagavad Gita. What does it say? Na karmana, na prajaya, na dhanena, na dhanena. Upanishad says like this. Na karmana, na prajaya, na dhanena, na dhanena. Acquiring wealth or by charity or by activities, one can realize this form, the truth. That's what Upanishad says. And the same thing Krishna repeats here also, that it is not possible to know these things. Sometimes people think, when they are in distress, they go on a pilgrimage, isn't it? Sometimes people go on a pilgrimage when they are in distress. So, Tirthayatra, it says. So, when they go on pilgrimages, and they go here, there, everywhere, and then they come back, they feel a temporary relief from the distress, what they have experienced in life. So, that time by traveling to holy places and associating with people in the spiritual life, they feel a little relief from the distress. What, for example, sometimes when someone who is very beloved, one dies at the family, and just like sometimes parents lose one of their children, or husband loses his wife, or wife loses her husband. These things do bring sudden distress like that in life, affects people. So normally people who have a little bit sensible, sometimes if the mind goes in the wrong direction, it goes in the wrong way. But people who are a little bit thoughtful and spiritually absorbed, they would not think in the wrong way. They will think anyhow, this is life, I have to accept it. So let me at least for some time stay away from this scene and go on a pilgrimage or visit places, different spiritual places, and try to find some satisfaction in the mind. So that's normal. So, naham vedirna ravasana danina chejaya shakevam vidho drishtam drishtavana simam yadha. In this particular verse, Krishna is telling us how to take that spiritual realization, how to accept that. It can be different for different people. You can see that, how this changes with person to person, how one accepts things in life, in this world, which changes from everyone, one to another. An example I can give you, through that example you may be able to understand it better, how people take same thing in different ways. A same experience, two, three, four different people, they all take it in different ways. Why does that happen? We'll see that. When you have seen sometimes some sannyasi or guru, they take a lot of their disciples or their brahmacharis or together, they take them on a pilgrimage to so many places, isn't it? It's quite common. In India particularly, it's quite normal. Especially now with the traveling facilities getting better, it's getting more. But in the olden days also it used to be, but they used to walk those days. Because all of them were very spiritually absorbed in that, they used to visit all the holy places, right from Himalayas to Kashmir to Kanyakumari, they traveled on foot. And that was quite a common thing. So, nowadays also you can see many, many spiritual leaders, they take people on together trip to different holy spots and to explain to them the background of this. Like this parikrama, what happens in Vrindavanam, similar things like that, going on parikrama. But instead of going in Vrindavan, they go to all other places like Hrishikesh, Badrinath, Haridwar, all different places, Dwaraka. So, this is quite common. So, once it so happened, a sannyasi was taking a group of people like this on a pilgrimage. He was taking a group of people on a pilgrimage. And it was somewhere after Hrishikesh. They had to cross the river. So those days, the bridges were not built. There were no bridges. Most of the places, boat facilities were there. Somebody will cross you or cross the river with a boat. And those rivers were mostly, you couldn't cross otherwise, because often the ice will melt in the Himalayas and the water level can change very easily in these rivers. Just like in the Ganga River also, water level changes very easily. So, he was taking them on this pilgrimage, and at a particular place they had to cross the river to go to the other side. And the only option they had was a boat. I don't know, there was about 10 or 15 people, not a lot. And their leader, the guru or sannyasi or whoever that was, he was with them. There were one young boy also in that group, one family. From the family, there was a few children. There was a young lad about 10, 12 years old, was also with them. So while they were crossing the river, it was already late in the afternoon. And it so happened that particular day it started raining heavily. And as you know, these boats are not the modern speed boats. They are the old boats in India. What they are like, the very bare minimum, what you need to get across to the other side. It has no safety systems. It doesn't have any, the life belts or any such thing. People just get in and he starts rowing. And if you get the other side, you got there. And if you don't get it, that's it. That's the way it is. So that's kind of boat, you can imagine. And the, of course, it was driven by, it was not fully rowing type, but it was driven from the top by the captain or what you call them, the person who was driving the boat. So they all got into the boat, and after a while it was getting closer to the dark. They were expecting to cross the boat, cross the river and get to the other side before it gets dark. So suddenly halfway, heavy rain started, and along with that strong winds came. Strong winds and rain started coming, and people started getting a little bit disturbed. They were getting frightened because they had not experienced that before. And they knew their limitations, what can happen if anything happens. And the river was full of water. So they were naturally being devotees. What do the devotees do? They chant immediately, isn't it? That's what they will do. When a disturbance comes or difficulty comes in life, they started the bhajan straight away in the boat. They were not dancing, they were only having the bhajans in the boat. So as the weather was getting worse, the bhajan's intensity also was increasing. It's getting stronger and stronger. But there was no sign of the weather changing. The rains were getting heavier, the wind was getting stronger, and added to that, the visibility was also very poor. It was getting dark and the clouds were piling up and they couldn't see very clearly where they were going. So the leader of this group, he went upstairs, and before he went upstairs, they started asking him, all the members in the group, they started asking him, is it common like this, it happens when you cross this river? He says, no, it never happened before, this is the first time, he says to them. The first time this has happened, he says. So, and then he says, it looks that there is some sinful people in the group. He gives a decision also, coming like that to them. So they all say, yeah, it is true. Let's ask the man on the top, captain, ask him what to do about this. So he goes up to ask the captain. So this little boy who was 10 years old or so, he also goes in because he can go anywhere, isn't he? Nobody will ask him, what are you doing? Because their mind was all absorbed in the other things. So he goes with them. And when he goes up there, he asks the captain that what is the situation, he says. Captain says, doesn't look very hopeful. He says, it doesn't look very good, he said. So he says to him, has this happened before? He said, no, never before, he said. So exactly what he said downstairs, the captain repeated on the top floor, on the first floor, wherever it was. He says, it hasn't happened before. Ah, so what do you think, he said. He says, what can I say? He says, I think we may not get to the other side. It looks like that, he said. By then the boat was, it was in real trouble, that they were feeling that the it's going to any time topple. That was happening then. And then he also said, only God can protect us. He said like that. In a natural way, he said, I think it has come to that stage that only God can protect us now. Don't know what will happen. I don't know where we are going, we have lost the route and I can't see anything, which way we are going, the boat is going and it is continuously getting thrown at both sides. So this boy heard this, the man heard this, the leader, they both came down. He came down, all the people who were there, they asked him, what did he say? What did the captain say? The captain says, there is no hope. It looks hopeless, he said. It looks hopeless. Don't know what to do. By now, the bhajans have stopped. Everything else, that's how it was. Bhajans have by now stopped. See, bhajans and all, only after a moment you will do. After that, when they really come to the crunch, bhajan also will stop. I don't know whether you have thought like that. In life is like that, isn't it? Krishna, Krishna, Krishna will go on. Up to the point when the danger hits, you don't have Krishna there at that time. Krishna will have to go away. Then you have to face the danger at that time. And the same thing happens at death also. This happens exactly the same thing happens at death. Today we will say, at the time of death, I'll think about Krishna. I make all my plans now. But at the right moment, when the death comes and hits you, that time Krishna won't be there. It won't be there because the faith is like that. That Shraddha has not come to the mind enough to accept Krishna. We are not accepted Krishna like that. At the moment, with a little fear, we stay to Krishna consciousness, with a little fear. And therefore, sometimes while reading Srimad Bhagavatam, one thing is that in the fifth canto, when the hellish planets are discussed there, Sri Shukan says to Parikshit one important point there, that it is also there in the Kapila Vasudeva statements to Devahuti Devi, that these hellish planets, you don't have to even go to the hellish planets to see that. All that hell exists in this world as well. Atraiva naraka sorga iti mata prajakshade. That you don't have to go to hell to see all the hell. All that hell, what is discussed in the Bhagavadam, does exist. And we don't have to think, oh, do they exist or do they don't exist? And we have to be fearful of them, about these hellish conditions. Otherwise, we are not human beings. When the soul is leaving this body, and when we do not develop Krishna consciousness enough, we have no right to get, and having engaged in various kinds of sinful activities in this world, we have no right to get any exemption from the punishment. You have to remember, Yamadharma Raja is willing to receive us there at that time and send us through all the punishments what is required. Who is Yamadharma Raja? It's our Vidura who is present there, isn't it? Vidura is there. That is why the beauty of the third, fourth, fifth canto is this, that this is happening between Vidura and Maitreya. And who is Vidura? Vidura is the person who has to give this punishment to all these people. That is why Vidura and Maitreya Samvadam has come in the Bhagavadam, because of this reason. That it is in Vidura's presence, all the punishments are instituted to the living entities. All those excessively hellish planets and the two chapters, Forest of Enjoyment in the Bhagavadam, if you read that, this fear must come to a person. If it doesn't come, he's not even a human being. Because he has not understood what Bhagavadam is then. So anyway, coming back to this story, what has happened was, this person came down from the top of the boat to the downstairs and told the people there, captain is saying there is not much hope, can't do anything about it. But the boy heard that upstairs. He said, God has come to protect us. That's how he understood that. He said, only God can help, he said. So the boy took it that God is coming to help us, he said. So he says to everybody, Krishna is coming now, right now to protect us. Chanting, everybody should chant now, he says. The boy was saying, so the same message, the boy took it in one way, the leader, he also didn't have enough faith. He couldn't take it completely. Well, the boy had no complications in his mind. He was only 10-12 years, he accepted it. Krishna is coming to protect us. There is a danger, yes, but Krishna is coming to protect us. And he says to everybody, let's chant Hare Krishna right now. And he spoke like this. So, in this verse you will see, Naham vedirna tapasa nadanena na chejaya shakeva vidho drishtam drishtavanasimam yadaham. That unless we have this understanding that through devotion and by Krishna's mercy alone, we will realize Krishna. And that firm faith, Shraddha, is required. Shraddha is required. Otherwise, it is not possible to see this form of Krishna. Krishna is making very explicitly clear there, that it is Shraddha that is keeping a person fixed up in spiritual life. Otherwise, everything with suspicion all the time, it's not going to happen. Krishna says there. Then, Bhaktya tunanyaya shakya ahamevam vidho arjuna nyadum drishtanja tatvena praveshtanja parandavam. That Krishna says there. Bhaktya tunanyaya shakya ahamevam vidho arjuna nyadum drishtanja tatvena praveshtanja parandavam. Arjuna is addressed as Parantapa. Parantapa, what does it mean? Parantapa means one who is burning inside for a higher thing. Param means superior thing. Tapa means to burn himself. So one who is in that condition, that is Arjuna's state of mind at the moment. He wanted to realize the truth. And Krishna says here, Bhaktya tvananyaya shakya ahamevam vidho Arjuna nyatum drashtam chatatvena praveshtam cha parandavam. Krishna says that in order to realize the truth, that in order to realize the truth, it's only possible through bhakti. Bhakti is devotion, not by any other means. In other words, in this particular verse, Krishna has put the introduction for the next chapter. Next chapter is Bhakti Yoga, isn't it? Next chapter is Bhakti Yoga. But here, Krishna is making a little bit, a kind of a promotion or an advertisement for the next chapter. It's already an introduction in this way. Bhaktya tunanyaya shakya ahamevam vidho arjuna nyadum drashtam jadatvena praveshtam ja parandava. Three things are mentioned there. Nyadum, drashtam, praveshtam. You can see the three words there. Nyadum means to know, drashtam means to see, praveshtam means to enter. In other words, these three things are important. Nyadum drashtam jadatvena praveshtam ja parandava. It says to Arjuna, Arjuna, it's only possible to know me and to know me and to see me and to enter into me. In other words, to realize Krishna. Only it is possible through devotion. That is what Krishna is saying there. That self-realization is the purpose of spiritual life is to realize the self. We must not forget that. Whole of Bhagavad Gita was spoken only to bring that point across to us. How important it is to realize the self. That is the goal. So realizing the self means this is what it is, that realizing Krishna. That so in order, while bringing that point, Krishna puts it in this way, that when you are searching after the truth, once you have realized the truth, Krishna says that is what will happen. You will enter into the truth. Now there is something important to know here, that what is our normal condition? Normal condition is we accept everything as we are, which is not our true identity, isn't it? What is not our swarupam? Swarupam means our form, real form, we don't accept. We accept everything else as our form. That is why we are able to very strongly identify with the all the falsities of this world. What is our connection with this world, if you think about it? The connection with this world is through the body, isn't it? The mind and the intelligence is telling us there is beyond this bodily existence we have some other identity. But still, because through the identification with the body, we are able to identify with this world and we feel a great happiness and satisfaction from that. Is it not? So that is our normal. Normal means the standard existence. Normal existence, in other words. So here, the one who has the capacity to break away from that and come to his true identity, spiritual identity as spirit soul, he is the one who has come out of that. He is the one who has succeeded in his effort. The science of self-realization or spiritual realization is not something which can be looked at from an intellectual platform. It is something experienced. It is. So when one has started experiencing that, then he does not require any more any proof for that. Even Shastram is not necessary after that. Shastram is only required up to that point. When you started realizing your true identity, I am spirit soul, and the real spiritual life begins, where is the need for Shastram after that? So all the Shastram and other things are also up to that point of realizing the self. And one who is capable of doing that, he is Parantapa. That's what it is. So Arjuna is in our situation. ഭക്തിയാത്വനന്വയാശക്യാ അഹമേവം വിധോർജുന ജ്ഞാതും ദൃഷ്ടം ച തത്വേന പ്രവേഷ്ടം ച പരന്തവാം. ദാറ്റ്സ് വാട്ട് കൃഷ്ണ സേസ് ദേർ. This can only understand, this can be understood even in our Krishna consciousness life also. This attitude is necessary because we are not realizing Krishna. Often people will say, oh, I have been chanting so many years, I have done so much devotional service, I have done this, I have done that, but still I have no realizations, they say. I have not experienced Krishna. I don't know what it means. So why does these things happen? It happens because the reason for that is this. I can understand it in a better way. There was one, a very powerful emperor. A powerful emperor. Now, this emperor had one good quality in him. What was that? He will pray. He will pray throughout the day at different times. I think he followed Islam religion, so he prayed five times a day, whatever the system was they had. So, in his kingdom once, there was one man lived with his wife, and they were poor, and they didn't have a very, they had to struggle very hard to make a living. So it so happened once that the husband went away to work somewhere. Those days, it was not working like today, 9 to 5 or anything like that. They had to go out and earn a living. So husband went away looking for to acquire some wealth. And normally he used to come home in the evening. The wife was waiting. Right? Wife was waiting at home. It was quite late in the afternoon. The husband never came back. Husband didn't come back. So the wife got into anxiety, because knowing very well that the type of work husband did, sometimes it could be risky. And she was always under the anxiety whether he will return today or whether there could be any problems at work. Things like that was going through her mind. And she was thinking about it, and for a long time she waited, thinking about her husband, when he will return. So after some time, she couldn't stay home. She became very disturbed about her husband not returning home yet. So she decided to go searching for him. She left home and started running into the place where he said that he has gone to work that particular day. Some kind of work he did, manual labor. So she was running, looking for him, why he hasn't turned up that day, got back that day. So while running, she had to go to a route where on that particular day, this emperor had come on a hunting mission or something. He was in the forest and he had been there for some time, but it was his time for the prayers. So he carried his prayer mat, what they use for prayers. So he put the prayer mat, and on the path, the walking road, he has put the prayer mat on the side, and he was praying there. And this lady was running through that path. Next to that, he was praying there. She didn't notice any of that thing. She didn't notice any of the emperor was there, king. Nothing was in her mind. Her mind was completely focused on how to get to her husband, who was away. So while running, he was praying. And while praying, he was paying his obeisances like this. And in that process, what happened was, while she was running, she kicked him with her foot. But she didn't notice it. She didn't take note of it. She just ran, because her mind was so much absorbed in seeing her husband. The king noticed that somebody has kicked him and got very angry at that time. Being the king, somebody could come and kick him like that, especially when he was praying like that. So what he did was, he got up from the prayers and looked at her. And seeing this woman running, first he thought he should call her and punish her then and there. But suddenly something gave him this thought in his mind, I am praying now, how can I? I won't say anything now, saying like that. He continued his prayers. she ran away. She ran looking for her husband. After some time, she saw her husband and she was very happy. And both of them were coming back. Both of them were coming back. At that time, the king was sitting there. He has finished his prayers and sitting there. So, while returning, she was very happy, the husband she has found. They were holding their hands together. Just like you see when they come back from the movie and all that. How the husband and wife come back happily, the same way, holding hand each other. In a happy mood, they were returning. So, when they were returning, this lady saw the king sitting there. And both the husband and wife came close to them and paid their respects to him, seeing that the king was there. In a very respectful mood, they stood in front of him. He made him more angry now. He thought, while going, he kicks me and goes, and now comes back and pays obeisances to me, he says. So he asked her, first he showed his unhappiness and told her that, did you not run this way a little while ago? And do you know that you have kicked me when I was praying? He said. She said, I didn't know that, she said. So he says to her, that now you are coming back to me and paying your respects to me. What for? He says, and you know what I have to do with you? Like that, he was getting a bit heavy about it. She said to him like this. She said, Maharaj, in the same very respectful way, he says to her, she says to him that maybe I have kicked you without knowing that you are doing your prayers. But let me ask you one thing, she says to him, that is this right that when you were praying very seriously to the Supreme Personality, Supreme Lord, that you were thinking about me rather than that you could not think about in your mind was absorbed in me? Is that a good thing? She said to him. Apparently the king was so intelligent, he was able to get the message. In other words, that when you are engaging in spiritual life and spiritual activities, you cannot afford to direct your mind for material problems and material issues. It doesn't work like that. Two things cannot be handled together. Not only that, you were saying there, the message was very clear to the king, that she has taught me something very important. What is that? That if I am sincerely praying to the Supreme Lord, to the Creator, whoever that he was praying to, if I am sincerely praying, all these things should not be a matter of concern to me. It should not affect my mind, affect my life. And that is how spiritual life has to be. All what is going on in this world should not come on the way in your path of spiritual life. It cannot. That is why in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi says, Ahaituki apradihada yenalma samprasidati. There is no impediments in spiritual life. Ahaituki apradihada. Nothing can come on the way when a living entity wants to go back to Krishna. Nothing can come on the way. There is nothing that will stop him. Only what is lacking is Shraddha, the seriousness. The seriousness, that's what's lacking. And therefore, all the other things in this world will come on the way as a cause of disturbance. As a cause of disturbance. Ahaituki apradihada yena alpa samprasidadi. That when the spirit soul, when it is engaged in Krishna's service, automatically the person is happy and blissful about it. There's nothing that can come on the way. That is what Srimad Bhagavatam is also saying. These are important things in spiritual life. To note that when one comes to Krishna consciousness, all other things are less significant. And that is how that Krishna has spoken. Bhaktyatunanyvaya shakya ahamevam vidho arjuna jnatum drishtanjana tvena praveshtanja parandava. Then Krishna is concluding that chapter. Mal kalmakrata mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjidaha nurvaira sarvabhudeshu yasamamedi pandava. Now Krishna is closing the chapter of universal form. Mal karma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjidaha. The necessity of leading a spiritual life in the proper way. That is what is explained in that. Mal karma krita mal paramo. Do everything for me. Krishna says in that, isn't it? Mal karma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjidaha nurvaira sarvabhudeshu yasamamedi pandavam. Then mind, body and intelligence, everything in Krishna's service.
That's what Krishna is asking us. Krishna says here
that one who does everything for me, that's what Malkarma means. Malkarma means one who does everything for me. This same verse, this same particular verse is what is expanded in the next chapter. In the next chapter, all these things will come in detail. Malkarma krita malparamo. Malparamo means one who has taken complete shelter of me. First one who does everything for me. Malkarma means one who does everything for me. Malparama means one who has taken complete shelter of me. Malbhakta sangavarjidaha, one who is always performing bhajana. Malbhakta, one who has become my devotee. And what else? Sangavarjidaha, one who has given up all attachment in this world. So these are the things what is necessary to advance in Krishna consciousness. Krishna says there, mal karma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjidaha. If all these things are there in a person, then what else? Narvaira sarva bhudeshu. He has no more enmity towards any other living entity. No more enmity towards any other living entity. Why is there is enmity? These are all things to be thought through very deeply. Enmity comes from where? When one does not know the relationship with Krishna. That is when all this enmity comes. He is my friend, he is my enemy, he is this, he is that. All these things come from where? From lack of this realization of one's identity, or one's own identity. Once identity is known, all these things will go away. It has no meaning actually. The so-called friend and enemy in this world are equally bad. You will see that in the Bhagavatam. Very clearly it says at the end, they are all problems. Friend is a problem, enemy is also a problem. And also the indifferent, the three types. Shatru, Mitram, Udasinan. All three things. This is why Bhikshugita was spoken in the Bhagavatam. It's one of the most beautiful prakaranam in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhikshugita. 19th chapter, I think, in the 11th canto. Through that one chapter, Krishna taught this world. One who wants to go back to Krishna, one has to give up all these connections with Mitram, friend, Shatru, enemy, and Udasinan, indifferent. In other words, all connection has to be broken up at some point. One has to break up the attachment to this world. It's necessary. Otherwise, Krishna says, it is not possible. It is not possible. So, in the same way, Krishna is saying here, mal karma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjidaha. Sangavarjida, it's a qualification in spiritual life. Sangavarjida. That qualification, what else? Nurvaira. Nurvaira means no enmity to it. How can the enmity develop anywhere? Enmity is only on the bodily identity. When one is on the bodily concept of life, he has friend and enemy. Otherwise, where is the enemy? There is no enemy. And there is no friend also. There is no friend, there is no enemy. Nurvaira sarva bhudeshu. To all other living entities, nirvairam. Means that nirvairam means no vairam. Vairam means that inimical mood, revengeful mood. It shouldn't exist in a person who wants to go back to Krishna. That's what Krishna says. No enmity towards any living entity. Krishna says, no enmity towards any living entity. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, while talking about Prahlada, Krishna says there, what does Krishna say? Krishna says to the demigods, what was this greatest quality in Prahlada that attracted Krishna towards him? And that is what has made Krishna to realize that a proper advanced devotee's symptom is like that. What is that? Nurvairaya prashandaya swasudaya mahatmane prahladaya yatha druhye hanishebi varorjidam. That nurvairaya prashandaya prahladas, this particular mood was such a overwhelming effect on Krishna. Krishna says nurvairaya prashandaya, always peaceful and no enmity towards anyone. Even his own father, who gave him so much of distress and tried to punish him in so many ways, Prahlada is saying to Krishna, let his intelligence become better, let him be purified, let him get better, even though he has done so much to him. And all these demons, Prahlada says, let their intelligence get purified. That is how Prahlada prayed to Narasimha Murthy. So the same thing here also, Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita that mal karma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjidaha nurvaira sarva bhudeshu yasamam edi pandavam. Arjuna, Krishna says to Arjuna that one who is offering all his services to me, mal karmam, one who does my work, mal parama, one who has taken complete shelter of me, mal bhakta, one who is my devotee, sangha varjidaha, one who has given up all association with this world. Sangha means all association with the material life, material way of life. That's what sangha means. Sangam is two types, salsangam and dusangam. Salsangam is what we have mostly. Salsangam means association with the devotees of Krishna. That is more important. Nurvaira sarva bhudeshu, free from any vairam, enmity towards other living entities, or to yasamamedi pandava, he can come back to me. And Krishna concluded that chapter of universal form in this way. Through this particular verse, Krishna has concluded. Then, when Krishna heard this, and in this chapter you can notice that Krishna has stressed about devotion again, isn't it? At the end, Krishna is stressing about devotion again. Then, why it is spoken like that is, how rare this thing called bhakti is. That is what Krishna is saying here. That jnanam, karmam and all that, it is possible to perform. But bhakti is a very, very rare thing. Said, in studying Vedas or performing austerities, penances and performing sacrifices, even that, Krishna says, is not guarantee. Is not a guarantee that you will come back to me. But bhakti will. And that way, Krishna closed that chapter. That, in other words, in this chapter, also pointing out to us, jnanam, karmam, yogam and all that, it's only to eventually to become a devotee, to become a bhakta. In order to generate bhakti inside, they are all helpful. Not that they are to be rejected. They are all helpful in developing devotion to Krishna. That is the point Krishna is bringing out through this. So, we have finished now 11 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. So with this 11th chapter, you have noticed also that initially Krishna did not talk about bhakti very much in the beginning. First, you can see from the second chapter onwards, jnanam, karmam, that's how the second chapter went through jnanam and karmam. In third, fourth and fifth, Krishna was talking about mostly about karmam, isn't it? Karmam was stressed. How important it is to purify oneself through karmam. That was discussed in those three, four chapters like that. And then when it came to sixth chapter, Krishna talked about dhyanam, meditation process. And then to some extent about jnanam. Jnanam was discussed in the seventh chapter. In the eighth, Ashtanga Yogam was discussed, the yoga process. And then Krishna switched on to bhakti after that. So in other words, you can say that all those things were spoken, karmam, jnanam and yogam and all were spoken in order to bring us to this point of devotion, to bhakti. How they can all help in the process of advancing in the path of bhakti. Because otherwise, without proper knowledge of our identity, what Krishna has spoken about in the second chapter, and without purifying one's karma, which Krishna has spoken in the third, fourth and fifth chapter, and without controlling the mind, what Krishna has spoken in the sixth chapter, and without having proper knowledge, what Krishna has spoken in the seventh and eighth chapter, the process of bhakti in the ninth, tenth and eleventh is difficult. It's very difficult. Krishna is saying like that. So, preparing us to bring us to this. In other words, if you look at Bhagavad Gita, the first six is karmam, and the sixth is bhakti, and the sixth is jnanam. So, it has reached the peak at the Raja Yogam chapter, when Krishna outrightly says there, and that there is nothing else to do except to take my shelter. Very clearly, Krishna has put forward there in the ninth chapter. As well as in the tenth chapter, in order to make us realize Krishna's position, how to approach Krishna, the tenth chapter was spoken. Isn't it? How to approach Krishna. So how to see Krishna in the whole creation and to develop that realization in oneself that Krishna's position is the Supreme Truth. And then in the 11th chapter, in order to establish that strongly in Arjuna's mind and in our mind, Krishna revealed his form to Arjuna. Arjuna has got that realization so that he could experience that. Whatever that has been spoken before is a reality. It's not something that was impractical. But it is practical, and when one achieves that, this is what happens to that. So Arjuna was instructed on the theory side as well as on the practical side. Everything was spoken now. So with this 11th chapter, we are more or less coming to a close of this bhakti process. But when Krishna spoke this last thing, Upanishads, Brahma Vidya it is, isn't it? It is Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Upanishadsu Brahma Vidyayam. Brahma Vidya is what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. It is also called Yoga Shastram. It is a Yoga Shastram, the Shastram of Yogam. And it is a discussion between Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvadam. Krishna and Arjuna is discussing mutually this thing. And Vishwarupa Darshanam, that is what Arjuna had seen in this 11th chapter. Vishwarupa Darshana Yoga Nama Ekadasha Adhyaya. Ekadasham Adhyayam of the 11th chapter is what we have finished. So, when this has happened, when this last verse was spoken, last two, three verses, Arjuna understood that bhakti is the topmost service to Krishna. That is the best process to realize Krishna. There is no other process superior to bhakti, superior to devotion. So when Arjuna realized that, Arjuna had an important question, one of the most important questions he asked in the next chapter straight away. And that is how the next chapter begins. Chapter 12, Bhakti Yoga. So in that Bhakti Yoga, the first question Arjuna raised is a very, very, very significant question. Often misunderstood by people and often confuses people, not understanding it properly what the question is. And often people use that verse, misinterpret things, and arguments build up from there, not realizing what Krishna has actually tried to convey through that message. From these verses in Bhagavad Gita, and the next chapter is also a very small chapter. There is only 20 verses in the next chapter. There's only 20 verses in the next chapter. But these 20 verses in this next chapter, they are pregnant with knowledge. It's not only bhakti that is discussed in the next chapter. That is discussed about temple worship, deity worship. There is discussed about jnanam, discussed about karma, discussed about bhakti, different kinds of deity worship. Everything is in these 20 verses. Krishna has packed it together with such a deep knowledge in there. When you go through that, you will experience that how deep that this particular chapter is, the next chapter, the 12th chapter, titled as Bhakti Yoga. In the first chapter, we saw there was how many verses? There was 47 verses in the first chapter where Krishna was listening to Arjuna's all complaints, isn't it? Arjuna was moaning there, saying about his philosophical realizations which he was revealing to Krishna. And Krishna cut through that in the second chapter with 72 verses, where jnanam and karma was discussed, and one of the most essence of Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. Which chapter can you avoid in Bhagavad Gita? There is no chapter in Bhagavad Gita which you can say that, oh, I don't need to read that. No. You have to read through each and every chapter, each and every verse, each and every letter, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, is a mantra. That is the beauty of Krishna's knowledge. That 72 verses in the second chapter, Krishna talks about the importance of our spiritual identity, knowing that and how important it is to identify with it and what are the difficulties in identifying. And in the third chapter, which is about 43 verses, what did Krishna say? Krishna spoke in that 43 verses through that importance to purify one's karma. How important karma is, because as I said before so many times, karma and jnanam, these are the two things a living entity is given when he comes to this world. He doesn't have any knowledge of devotion. Nobody is born as a pure devotee, is it? And even after 80, 90 years, we are still doubtful about Krishna's existence. Sometimes even we question about the process of devotion, because that is how the conditioned mind is. So when we come here, purification starts with karma. That is what the 43 verses in the third chapter. And then again, 42 verses in the next chapter, is Jnanakarma Sannyasa Yoga, as it is titled. And then Karma Sannyasam in the next chapter, which is 29 verses. And then the next chapter is 47 verses. And 30 verses in the other one, next one. Then 28, 34, 42. And last chapter word, 55 verses. So all other chapters are much more verses than in the next chapter. In the Bhakti Yogam chapter. Bhakti Yogam has only 20 verses compared to so many other verses in the other chapters. So the first verse in this 12th chapter is the 470th verse of the 700 verses. You see, Bhagavad Gita has totally 700 verses. So this first verse in this 12th chapter is verse 470. That is how where we are today. So, as we have come across, we have noticed how karma is important, jnanam is important, yogam is important, and bhakti is the highest goal. The goal is bhakti, Krishna. Krishna is the goal, nothing else. But to get to Krishna, all these things can help. They are all helpful partners in our advancement in spiritual life. So, Krishna says there, what is the question? The chapter is titled as Bhakti Yogam. Chapter is titled as Bhakti Yogam. Arjuna Uvaja. Arjuna's question to Krishna. First question. Evam sadadayuktaye bhatta swam paryubhasade ye chapyaksharam avyaktam tesham ke yogavittamaha. This was the question. Arjuna says to Krishna, there's a lot of things to know here. In this verse, please hear this chapter very carefully, because they will clear up a lot of misconceptions in us. Most of us have a lot of misconceptions also about Bhagavad Gita, about deity worship, about jnanam, about karmam. All these kind of things Krishna clarifies in this chapter. Evam sadadayuktaye bhaktva swam paryubhasade ye chapyaksharam avyaktam tesham ke yogavittamaha. Arjuna says to Krishna, evam sadadayuktaye bhaktva swam paryubhasade. Normally, there are two classes of transcendentalists in this world, in the Vedic tradition. And that is an established fact. Everyone accepts that. There are two classes of transcendentalists. Prabhupada calls them as transcendentalists. That means those who are advancing in the spiritual path. There are two classes. This is the Vedic system, consists of these two classes of people. And Arjuna is saying here, ye japyaksharam avyaktam tesham ke yogavittamaha. One was, normally we call them as the impersonalists or the jnanis, and the other is called the devotees or the bhaktas. These are the two categories in the impersonal and the personalist. Personalist and the impersonalist. What I will do is, I'll just read a few purports from Srila Prabhupada on these verses, because Prabhupada himself has taken a lot of time to write this purport in this particular chapter, because it's something which one has to keep in one's mind. First verse, if you take, you will see the purport there. I'll read through the purport. Krishna has now explained about the personal, the impersonal, and the universal, and has described all kinds of devotees and yogis, which Krishna has done. Discussed about Ashtanga yogis, and the also about the impersonalist, Akshara Brahmam, we see in that in the 8th chapter. People who are practicing Karma Yogam, people who are practicing Jnana Yogam, Jnanis, all that Krishna discussed. But generally, Prabhupada says, generally, the transcendentalist can be divided into two classes. One is impersonalist and the other is the personalist. So both we have to know who they are and what they are and what their process is. Before we criticize anybody, we have to know what we are talking about. Simply banging somebody, oh, is this, is that, without knowing anything what he is, that won't get us anywhere. That is not very sound way of presenting things. This chapter will help us to understand what does impersonalism means, what is personalism means. And that is why in the introduction itself, what Arjuna asked this question. What is impersonalism? Who is an impersonalist? What is personalism? Who is a personalist? Both come from the Vedic tradition. You have to remember that. Prabhupada says here, Generally, the transcendentalists can be divided into two classes. One, the impersonalist, and the other, the personalist. The personalist devotee engages himself with all energy in the service of the Supreme Lord. The impersonalist engages himself not directly in the service of Krishna, but in meditation on impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested. That is the process of Jnana Yoga. We find in this chapter that of the different processes for realization to the Absolute Truth, Bhakti Yogam devotional service is the highest. If one at all desires to have the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he must take to the devotional service. Clear? Those who worship the Supreme Lord directly by devotional service are called personalists. Those who engage themselves in meditation on the impersonal Brahman are called impersonalists. Arjuna is here questioning which position is better. This was Arjuna's position. This caused a lot of problem for Krishna also, this question. What to talk about us? We are altogether confused. And we have more problems, naturally, but Krishna has in a much serious problem. Apparently, one Acharya says about this, that when Arjuna threw this question to Krishna, no other time Krishna was more careful in answering that question, because this very one question was enough. It has given a little pain for Krishna also to answer, because I'll tell you why it is like that. Both the traditions, personalism and impersonalism, comes from the Vedas. They are not come from outside. And for everybody in this creation, Vedas are the authority. Because Vedas are authority, you can't reject it. You can't reject it because it's come from the Vedas. To give you an example, years ago, when Prabhupada was here, in one instance, one devotee, he was a sannyasi at that time. I don't know what he is, I don't know where he is now, but he asked this question to Prabhupada in LA in November 27th and November 1968. That means at the very early days of Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada was there in 66, he went back to India, came back in 67, so hardly a year has gone. And the devotees who were there at that time, most of the devotees, they had read many books about the Vedic tradition. And many of them were impersonalist commentaries. They have read, many of them, different gurus' versions and this, that and the other. They have read. So naturally they had their doubt. They had open to everything. They didn't have any particular attachment to one thing or the other. So they had asked this question to Prabhupada. And if you look at Prabhupada's answer to that, you will get a proper picture of the whole story. Rather than ourselves formulating opinion, how Prabhupada saw them. Question was, Madhudvisha asking to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I think this is, did Lord Chaitanya take sannyasa from a Mayavadi sannyasi? This was the question. Did Lord Chaitanya take sannyasa from a Mayavadi sannyasi? Prabhupada says, yes. That is a formality. That is not very important. Because Mayavadi sannyasis, they are also Vedic sannyasis. They are not outsiders. But their interpretation of Veda is different. But they follow the Vedic rules. So this acceptance of sannyasam is following the principle of the Vedic rules. So the Mayavadi sannyasi may differ in his interpretation, but he is following the Vedic rules. So this acceptance of sannyasam is following the Vedic rules. So you can accept sannyasam even from Mayavadi. It doesn't matter. But you have to transcend the limits of Vedic rules. That is Krishna consciousness. That is also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although he took sannyasam, he did not assume the sannyasa title. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his brahmachari title from a Mayavadi. He took his sannyasam also from a Mayavadi. But he did not go along that route too far. He preached the Krishna consciousness, which is a higher subject matter. And although he took sannyasam, Prabhupada says, he did not assume the sannyasa title. His sannyasa guru was Keshava Bharati. Naturally, he would have accepted the Bharati title, because in the Mayavada system, in the impersonalist tradition, the system is, they have different titles for sannyasis. Bharati, Saraswati, Puri, these are all the titles that is generally given to them. And Saraswati is a very prominent title. You can see that system is even in the Vaishnava traditions also. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was given the title. So Saraswati was a sannyasa system. From there it has come. So this all come from the Vedic tradition itself. He did not assume the sannyasa title. His sannyasa guru was Keshava Bharati. naturally he would have accepted the Bharati title, Shri Krishna Bharati or something like that. But he remained Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Chaitanya is the name of the Brahmachari under the Bharati Sannyasi. So even this name Lord Chaitanya has come from that tradition. Bharati title, if the Sannyasi is Bharati, if the Sannyasi is a Bharati, the Brahmachari who will serve that Sannyasi will have a title called Chaitanya. That is how this Lord Chaitanya name has come. So Prabhupada is explaining to us how closely these things are in the Vedic tradition. It is inseparable because both are from the same tradition. Impersonalism and personalism comes from the same tradition. Chaitanya is the name of the Brahmachari under the Bharati Sannyasi. One Brahmachari. The Brahmacharis, they are also assistant or personal servitors of a Sannyasi. If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will find there Prabhupada explaining this system of Sannyasam and Brahmachari's life in there, where which title a Brahmachari gets for a Sannyasi who has a particular title. Say for example, Saraswati title will have a Chaitanya name as Brahmachari. There are so many names mentioned there, Aranyam, and also Saraswati title, Puri title, and there are so many names mentioned there. You can see they are all general titles given to the Sannyasis, and the Brahmacharis who underneath them, they get certain titles. That's also mentioned there. So in the beginning, that is the system. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, in the beginning he was accepted. That is the Mayavadi system. One is accepted first of all as Brahmachari, so that his name was Chaitanya. But even after his acceptance of Sannyasam, he did not assume the title Bharati. That means actually he did not take Sannyasam. Prabhupada says that was simply formality. Because Mayavadi Sannyasis thinks that he is God, so how can he can assume that title? He was going to preach that we are servant of God. Krishna servants we are. So naturally he could not proceed on that route of Mayavadi philosophy, impersonal philosophy. Therefore he did not assume that title. And besides that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to Lord see Jagannath Puri. He was going to Jagannath Puri to see Krishna. And his rod was taken away by Nityananda and it was broken and thrown away. So he apparently became very angry that you have broken my rod, sannyasa rod, so I am not going with you. He separated. These statements are there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in one sense, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not require to accept any sannyasa guru, but he accepted the formality that if one takes sannyasam, one has to take sannyasam from another sannyasi. That is a system. Just like if you want to get yourself married, you have to call for a priest. That does not mean that you have to agree with the priest's personal opinion. Do you follow? Prabhupada says. So this is the relationship between the impersonalists and personalists. Because they come from the Vedic tradition, in many ways we have a connection with them. But on the other hand, we don't agree with their process, final conclusions, that absolute truth is one, living entity and the truth is one. That we don't agree. We believe that devotees have a duty to serve Krishna. Devotees have the And loving service to Krishna is superior to merging with the Absolute Truth Krishna. This is the difference. Otherwise, come from the same tradition. The both come from the same tradition. So this is the answer. But when you accept a spiritual master, that's not allowed. Unless you can present agree with the spiritual master's opinion or philosophy, there is no need of accepting a spiritual master. There is no need. Yes, Prabhupada says like that. In that conversation to Madhavisha. So you can see that it is the same question what Arjuna is asking here. Arjuna is also asking the same question here. Who is superior? This was Arjuna's question to Krishna. Arjuna says here, evam satata yuktaye bhaktastvam paryubhasate ye chapyaksharam avyaktam tesham ge yogavittamaha. It's a beautiful question because the way Arjuna formulated that question, if you look through it, you will see there. Evam satata yuktaye bhaktastvam paryubhasate. A devotee has accepted Krishna wholeheartedly and is serving him. That is one person is doing that. And somebody else is not doing that. What is he doing? E chapyaksharam avyaktam. He is going after something which is not very clear what he is going after, isn't it? Impersonal Brahman, what he is proceeding after is a different, difficult thing. But still, there are many people who are following that route, to take to that process, isn't it? Who is superior? This was the Tesham Ke Yoga Vittama. Who is the superior out of the two? And you can understand Krishna's position now. The compiler of the Vedas, all this knowledge in the Vedic literature come from Krishna, isn't it? So, if one person comes and says to, Arjuna comes and says to Krishna, out of these two, who is superior? This is the question. In order to make this thing a little bit more clearer, one Acharya has spoken like this. How way he put it was that, like this way. There was one mother, she had two children. One child is going to the nursery classes, kindergarten or whatever that's called, LKG or lower kindergarten or whatever that is called. This, only that old, say two years or maybe 3 years, not more than that. Two boys, the other boy, he is grown up a little bit more. He's probably in the GCSE or that style, that age group. So he is grown up. He does not require so much attention like the little one. Little one requires a lot of attention. The other one is grown up enough, you can give him some responsibility. Mother knows what responsibility to give to that child. And so mother's position is she has got these two children. Somebody comes up to the mother and says to her that out of these two kids, whom do you like more? Whom do you like the best? Says. So what can the mother answer? Can the mother answer that question? Mother is in a predicament, isn't it? Mother cannot answer that question. So she says she doesn't want to answer that question. But the person persists, insists that she wants an answer. He says to her that if you can give up one of them, one of these two, whom will you give up? That was the next question. Whom will you give up out of the two? So mother holds on to both, the grown-up one and the younger one, tightly, and not able to answer that question. Because her attachment, for her, both the children are equally important. She's not able to throw them out, is it? Because they are all both equally dear to her. They are her children. But the questioner is asking this question, whom would you give up? Whom can you give up? Who is your dearest? Who is closer to you? Eventually, if she is an intelligent mother, what she will do? How she will answer that question? Because she has no choice now. She has to answer. She has to give some answer. And that is what she has been forced to by the person who has questioned that. So eventually she decided, because she is intelligent, mother is intelligent, she looks at the grown-up one who is going to the GCSE class one. And she looks at him and winks at him and calls this baby who is in the kindergarten or the nursery and tells him that I'll hold this, I'll give him away, and winks like this at the boy. So from there, you can see the message is clear, isn't it? That this child is grown up. He can understand. He knows that mother loves me as much as she loves the other child. So he has no complaint about it. Because he is grown up. He has understood. So therefore, he doesn't require that kind of protection like this child. He has gone in that spiritual life to that extent that he doesn't require that attention like this child who is on the who is closer to the mother. So it is exactly the same situation, very similar to that, what Krishna was thrown into. And that is how Krishna has answered also, in the same way. If you read through the chapter, you will notice all these things. These things are not mentioned in the chapter. But if you scrutinize that chapter properly and go through that, when Krishna lists certain things there, and comparing these two processes of impersonalism and personalism, Krishna will bring forth the point. Krishna answers that. First of all, a clear answer was given there. What was that? Krishna says there, when Arjuna questioned like this, Arjuna's question was that Maya Saktamana. Evam Sadana Yuktaye Bhaktaswam Padivasade. Ejapyaksharam avyaktam tesham ke yogavitamaha. What is that aksharam avyaktam means? Avyaktam means unmanifested. It is impersonal thing. that we don't know, there is no form, impersonal form, avyaktam. Akshara means Brahman. Akshara Brahman, we have seen in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, didn't we? That 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita was talking about Akshara Brahman. So, Echabi Aksharam Avyaktam, those who are following that process of the impersonalism, personal Brahman, they follow that route where they worship the Supreme in the impersonal form of Brahman realization. They come to that through the same process what Krishna has explained in the Bhagavad Gita. They also follow the same route. They are not different. There are many things common to both. There are many, many things which are common to both. Only the differences comes that the impersonalist, he wants to merge with Krishna. The personalist, he wants to continue his service to Krishna. He is a devotee because the happiness that one gets in Krishna consciousness, in serving Krishna, is far, far more superior than the happiness what one experiences in merging with Krishna. This is the difference. In merger, one ultimately annihilates his own existence in this world. He wants to give up his existence and he wants to become one with Krishna. That is why Sayujya Mukti is the one what they are endeavoring for, to attaining oneness with Krishna. That is the route they follow. And a devotee sees Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was preaching Krishna consciousness, love for Krishna. A devotee's happiness is in loving Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness, to love Krishna and to serve Krishna and being always under the shelter of Krishna. That happiness is superior to the happiness by in merging in Krishna's form, in the Brahman, in Brahman realization. So, all these things will come in the Bhagavatam also. You will find again and again this issue coming up in different places in different ways. In different places it will come up. You cannot avoid it. You cannot take it out from Vedic tradition means all these things together. You can't separate it out. Once you start separating it out, it will become very difficult to come to the right conclusions. Take for example, Ajamila story in the Bhagavatam. In the 6th canto, you will see the story of Ajamila. In the Bhagavatam, when Ajamila's story was spoken, where did Sudeva Goswami bring Ajamila in? I don't know whether you have noticed this in the Bhagavatam. They are all very, very interesting way. These great sages, a strong impersonalist was Sudeva Goswami prior to taking to Srimad Bhagavatam. And still he is one of the great traditional acharyas in the impersonalist school. Sudeva Goswami is a great acharya in the impersonalist school. So that Sudeva Goswami is talking Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj. And while talking Srimad Bhagavatam, he has brought certain things spot on, as they say, to make Parikshit realize certain important things. While discussing the 5th canto of Bhagavatam, at the very end of 5th canto comes the hellish planets. You must have seen that discussion on the hellish planets. Sometimes people read the hellish planets and they get a little bit shocked by that the punishment for some of our sinful activities is so high that if we have to go through these sinful activities and sinful reactions mentioned there, naturally one will take to Krishna consciousness seriously. And as I mentioned before, that all that is discussed there is spoken between Vidura and Maitreya. And that is the most interesting thing there. Because Vidura is the person who is supposed to execute all these things in the Yamalokam, isn't it? It's the same person who is sitting here in the dress of Vidura in front of Maitreya Maharshi. You know, in the Bhagavatam it is like that. It is Vidura Maitreya Samvadam. This story is Vidura Maitreya Samvadam. So Vidura knows these things well enough. It doesn't have to be told. It doesn't have to be told all these things. Who else knows better than Vidura, who himself is running the show there in the Padala Lokam? Vidura is running the Lokam, he is running the show. But still, in order that Parikshit should know these things, what was happening in those hellish planets, and Parikshit was hearing all these things, and prior to that, in the Bhagavatam you will notice one interesting thing. Suddenly, Sudeva Goswami says to Parikshit that there is a planet little above the hellish planet where Lord Balaram is glorified by chanting his holy name. It is mentioned there in the Bhagavatam. You can notice, you can take look Bhagavatam and look at all these things. You will find it interesting. That Srimad Bhagavatam, before the hellish planets were discussed, right before that, the holy name of Lord Balaram and his pastimes are discussed in detail, and as a great glorification of Lord Sankarsanamurti, which is Balaram, in there. Soon after Lord Balaram is discussed, immediately the hellish planets are spoken. And soon after the hellish planets were spoken, Ajamila's story was spoken. Ajamila's story was spoken. Soon after hellish planets were spoken, Ajamila's story was spoken. So in other words, when Parikshit Maharaj heard this description of the hellish planets, he was thinking, what have I done now? I have just thrown this dead snake in the neck of the great sage Shamegarashi, and I am sitting here waiting for the punishment to come. This was in the mind of Ajamila. In the mind of Parikshit. So soon after that, prior to hellish planets, Lord Balaram was glorified and the potency of Balaram's holy name. Immediately after hellish planets, Krishna's holy name comes in the immediate chapters. The first three chapters in the Shashta Skandam, which is the sixth canto, is fully referring to the glories of the holy name. Nothing but holy name. That is Ajamila's story, isn't it? Balaram's holy name there, Krishna's holy name here, in between the hellish planets. This is how Bhagavatam is packed, like a sandwich. Hellish planets in the middle, both sides, Krishna and Balaram keeping on either side. Where is my devotee? This is the situation. So what is Bhagavatam is telling us is this, that the potency of the holy name is such, when one chants seriously Krishna's names, he cannot go into the hellish planets at any circumstances. There is no question of going to hellish planets if one has taken to the process of chanting the holy name. At least that much is guaranteed. Even if we have chanted this name of Krishna, the name of Lord Balaram, which is our Mahamantram. Hare Krishna Mahamantram is nothing but Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna present there in that Mahamantram. That Mahamantram has got this protection that you cannot enter into hellish planets, because this holy name is either side protecting you from the hellish planets. So a devotee who has taken to the chanting process of Hare Krishna, of Mahamantram, has no possibility of going to the hellish planets. At least that protection is guaranteed in the Bhagavatam. Whether we will go back home, back to Godhead, back to Krishna in this lifetime, that we do not know. That is in Krishna's hands. But protection is guaranteed in the Bhagavatam, that one who has come to, because we do not know what all sinful activities we have done. Today we can say, oh, I have been such a nice person, thorough gentleman, they say, isn't it? We are all thorough gentlemen in this world. No doubt, we are all thorough gentlemen. Each other we can say that. But if he goes to Vidura's planet, if I tell him, I am a gentleman from earthly planet, whether Vidura will accept this gentleman or not, I don't know. That we don't know. What kind of gentleman they are looking for can be a different type of gentleman than the gentleman from this world. So the important thing to remember is this, that because we do not know what our previous karma is, in the previous lifetimes, what all we have done, we don't know. In this lifetime, you may know what you have done, good things and bad things. Even there, the marks are not very high. Most of it is not very favorable. It was easy to forget Krishna. The moment we came out of the womb of the mother, we have forgotten, isn't it? And then when do we come to Krishna? After get kicked by the material nature a lot. Only then, one day we start taking Bhagavad Gita and start looking Dharma Kshetra, Kuru Kshetra, what's all Bhagavad Gita is all about. We start looking at it. Up to that time we have no time. We are busy with our different management problems. So what is Bhagavad is saying is, that the Krishna consciousness or the chanting process is such a powerful process that one, it guarantees of not going to the hellish planets under any circumstances. Even if one has chanted not with complete faith, not with full concentration. Somehow or the other, if this mantra has come from his lips, he is protected. He is protected from the hellish experiences in the hellish planets. Because once you read through the hellish experience in the hellish planets, you will probably pack up and go. You don't want to know anymore anything about Bhagavatam. It is so powerful the way it has been presented in the fifth canto. So this Vidura has heard all these things. And when Ajamila's story begins in the sixth canto, Parikshit Maharaj asked these questions to Sudeva Goswami that if this is the way things are, that means the way it is discussed in the fifth canto of the hellish planets, Parikshit's concern was what will happen. Not for himself. Parikshit had no doubt that he will not go to the hellish planets. Although he did a wrong thing, because of his relationship with Krishna, there was no question of Parikshit going to hellish planets or anything. He knew that this has happened somehow. Krishna has prompted from within. Some reason was there why Parikshit did that. That we can only discuss when we discuss the first canto. Why it all happened like that. Parikshit had no fear of going to hellish planets. Someone who was protected within the womb of Uttara Devi by Krishna himself. Where is the question of him going to hellish planets? Question doesn't arise. And Parikshit knows this. He knew very well. And that is why when he came to give up his body in the Prayogamesham 7 days before his death, he told all those great sages who were present there, I don't want to hear any of your suggestions. Ashat alam gayada vishnu ghada. Just tell me about Krishna. I don't want to hear anything else. In order to say this, what should have been the frame of mind of Parikshit? Unless he was so convinced in his mind that Krishna will protect me. Ashat alam gayada vishnu ghada. In the Bhagavadam, in the first canto you can see. And who were the personalities who were present there? All that list if you look, such an impressive list of great personalities. The whole Vedic tradition shines through them. They are those personalities. Gautama, Pipalada, Arishtanemi, Kanna Maharshi, and Bharadwaj, Parashuram with all his disciples, Vishwamitra, Vasishtha, Durvasamani, Srinarada Maharshi, Vedavyas, endless list of great personalities who are the backbone of Vedic philosophy and Vedic culture. They were all present there. And they were discussing each other, what should we do for Parikshit? Parikshit says, you don't have to discuss anything for me. Ashat alam gayada vishnu ghada. Just sing about Krishna. Let me hear about Krishna and leave this body. Who can say this? Only Parikshit can say. Unless he was so convinced about it, he wouldn't have said that in the very first canto itself to Sudeva Goswami as soon as he arrived on the scene. And to speak about Krishna, who else is more qualified than Sudeva Goswami, than Sri Shukadeva? Shukadeva Brahmarshi says there at that time, as soon as Sudeva Goswami arrives, all these great personality gets up from their seat and welcomes him. And in the Bhagavadam, if you read that, you will notice there, the form of Sudeva Goswami. If Krishna takes away his peacock feather and all this garland everything and throws away his upper cloth, Sudeva Goswami looked exactly like Krishna. That is how it is mentioned there. In appearance, Sudeva Goswami and Krishna looked alike. Long arms and the beautiful smile. Only thing, there was no peacock feather, the crown or the upper cloth. Otherwise everything looked very much similar. And that Sudeva Goswami arrives there, and they all who are present there, Sri Narada Maharshi, Vedavyasa Maharshi, who compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, they are all vouching there that Sukadeva Goswami should speak about Krishna, nobody else. And it is in this background that Srimad Bhagavatam begins there. So what we are trying to talk about is this, that when Srimad Bhagavatam was presented at that point to Parikshit Maharaj, he had no fear about hellish planets. He knew. But then why did he ask this question? Reason is this. Parikshit is a king. A king's duty till he leaves this world is to look after his people. That is a kind of commitment from the king to the subjects. Otherwise he is not qualified to be a king. Not like today. Oh, it's only for 4 years. I'll make my share and I'll leave. then I am away, I'm gone for a few years, and I'll come back another in another dress next time. Another make another few millions and go. This is not administration. This is not the system what the kings, for those kings, saintly kings, they were called Rajarshis for this reason. Saintly kings, concerned about the welfare of the people. Therefore, their concern was ordinary people who are engaged in sinful activities, what will happen to them? So Parikshit, knowing very well, for our sake, Parikshit asked that question to Sudeva Goswami at that time. What was that question? Question was this, that this sinful activities people are performing. They are performing now, they have performed in their past life also. And for that, you can perform prayaschitam, atonement, isn't it? Atonement you can perform. But from atonement, is it possible, what will happen with the atonement? So, Parikshit's opinion was this, that simply performing atonement is not enough. It is just like this. Suppose there is a bottle which is filled with some perfume. Say you have thrown away all the perfume from the bottle, but the bottle will still smell the perfume, wouldn't it? Similarly, if a person has committed sinful activity in many lifetimes before, and even in this lifetime also, without caring for Krishna, continued sinful life, what will happen to him? What will happen to him is very clear, that he may perform sinful activity and he will atone for that. Or he may chant Hare Krishna. If you chant Prabhu 16 rounds, all that is wiped out. That's what we say, isn't it? All sinful activities is gone. In order to avoid that mentality, to use the chanting the holy name to wipe off our sinful activity, that particular chapter, Sudeva Goswami extended for 3-4 chapters. Just to make us aware, don't chant Hare Krishna in that mood. That I'll continue sinful life and I'll do everything to suit me, and then I'll chant Hare Krishna and show to the world that I'm a pure devotee. It doesn't work. We are cheating ourselves. So, in order to bring this point very clearly, in that chapter, when Parikshit asked that question to Sudeva Goswami, Sudeva Goswami answered like this, that karmana karma nirharam, that karmam you can purify by karmam. No question about that. Karmam you can purify by karmam. Karmana karma nirharam, he says. How can you purify? Karma yogam. Karma yogam is the process by which you can purify your own karmam. That is why karma yogam has been discussed in the Ajamila story in the Bhagavatam. Karma yogam comes first. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, karma yogam has been discussed. If the karmam is not pure, no matter what you carry on doing this in this world in the name of bhakti, that will never reach anywhere. You will not get anywhere. So having spoken that, Krishna, Sudeva Goswami says to Parikshit, I agree with you on that point what you have raised here. Karmam alone cannot purify. Why? Because karmam you can purify, your reactions you can wipe out by purifying by karmam. But what will happen to the vasanas that is gone in? Every karmam what we do is followed by what is called a vasana. Vasana means that a smell of this perfume that was filled in. Karmam is like a perfume. You have smelled it, and that smell will stay inside. It won't go easily, wouldn't it? Like in the bottle it stays. Similarly, that vasana of the karmam, the smell, vasana, the word itself is smell. Vasana means smell itself. So the vasana will stay inside. Karmam you can wipe away by atonement, by performing some, you can refer to some of the Vedic scriptures or discussing with some acharya. He will give you a solution for that. What you should do to wipe out the reaction of the sinful activity you have done. Say you have murdered someone, you have cheated someone, you have killed a cow. There are so many list of sinful activities in the Vedic philosophy. And all those sinful activities, you can counteract and wipe out their reaction by performing, counteracting with the purificatory process. But it will not purify the vasana. Vasana is still inside. In other words, that vasana will come out again when it gets a suitable opportunity. When it gets a suitable opportunity. Therefore, there it says there, manye kunjara shauchaval. It is like this elephant bathing, it says. You see how the elephant bathes? Those who are familiar with the bathing of the elephant, it's a well-known thing. Manye kunjara shauchaval. Elephants, what it is normally happens is, elephants are taken to the to the river or to the lake to bathe. So the Mahout, who looks after the elephant, he will spend hours and hours, two, three of them, because it's acre-like body, isn't it? So much you have to rub, hold, and they'll bring the shells of the coconut to rub that, because it is not easy to clean up that body. And hours running, rubbing it, and then pouring hundreds and thousands of liters of water on his body, he is more or less clean. And then he is tired by the time the Mahout is tired. And then he says to his dear friend, whatever his name is, he says to him that, "I have taken so much time to clean you." He'll talk to the elephant. Mahouts and elephants, they talk to each other. They know their language very well. He says to the elephant, "I have taken so much trouble and so much time to clean you. Please don't throw again dust and mud on your body. And stay quietly here. Let me go and have a cup of tea or something and come back. Please take care of yourself," he says. What does he do? The moment he leaves, first thing with that huge trunk, he starts picking up home. Abhishek starts there. Isn't it? Parishit Maharaj has been told by Sudev Goswami, says like this, "Manye kunjara shauchaval," that this atonement for sinful activities is like that. They'll perform sinful activity, they'll wipe out the result of sinful activity by atonement, and the next day what does he do? He starts the same thing again. Why? The vasanas have not gone from inside. This is the problem. So, what all vasanas are inside, we don't know. In so many lifetimes, so much sinful activities has been done. The result of that, all that is sitting inside as in the form of vasanas. And it is this vasanas is our main problem, not anything else. Why? This is what has happened to Ajamila. Ajamila's story, what happened? A brahmana who has been trained up properly in Vedic culture, Vedic tradition, very well looked after, and performed his spiritual life properly according to father's instruction. It took only a second for him to change his mind. Why? Vasanas inside. Vasana balal juhava narayana namakam sudam. That it is this vasana inside. The whole story of sixth canto is nothing but vasana. Vasana inside. And that is vasana that we are fighting against. It is this vasana that we are fighting against. And unless these vasanas are cleaned up, we will continue performing sinful activities endlessly. That is what sixth canto is teaching us. So we have to discuss this in detail another time. But we'll come back to Bhagavad Gita next Sunday and we'll continue with Bhakti Yoga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.